This is one of the few stories in the Gospels that we have independent sources for. This story about John the Baptizer is told in a very different version by a man named Josephus, a Jewish historian, in a book called The Antiquities of the Jews. He mentions John the Baptizer. He mentions John doing what the Gospels describe him doing, calling people to repentance, baptizing. He also mentions that Herod has him arrested and executed. He says that it takes place at Herod's fortress on the eastern side of the Dead Sea, Marcarus. But Josephus says it's because John has gotten too popular with the people. He had too many followers, and Herod was afraid of him. The hold that the Herods had on this so-called royal family was very weak. There were many people among the popular groups who thought, first of all, they weren't a royal family, and some of them even believed they weren't Jewish. So when this John, this preacher out in the wilderness, gained popularity, it frightened Herod. Josephus says he had him arrested and had him executed. Mark's story, as you just heard, is very different. Mark takes that same occasion and turns it into a soap opera. You have Herod. It gets a little confusing here because their father's name was Herod. This is Herod Antipas, who married the wife of his brother, Herod Philip. They like that name a lot for some reason. Her name was Herodias, the wife. And if you were listening closely, you found that the daughter is also called Herodias, although she's sometimes called Salome. Okay? In any case, in this tangle of relationships among the Herods, John steps in and condemns Herod Antipas for marrying his brother's wife after divorcing his own. Now, Herod has him arrested, according to Mark, but he won't have him executed. In part because he's afraid of him. John is very popular. In part because he likes listening to what he has to say. It says he loves listening to him, but he doesn't understand much of it. It's just like most preachers, right? But he keeps coming and keeps listening, and he protects John. Herodias despises John. And at this birthday party for Herod, at this birthday party, she sees a chance to take her revenge. Herod throws a big birthday party. As a part of the festivities, his daughter, actually Herodias' daughter, Herodias or Salome, everybody thoroughly confused at this point, dances. And even though it's a little creepy, he is so moved by this dance. He is so entranced by this dance, and probably a little bit inebriated by this point in the party, that he says, "That's so wonderful, I'm going to give you half my kingdom or anything else you ask for." Bad choice. Bad choice to open the door that wide. Well, she's just a girl. She doesn't know what to ask for, but she goes to her mother. She goes to Herodias. She says, "I don't know what to ask for. What do I ask for?" Herodias knows exactly what she wants. She says, "You go ask him for the head of John the Baptist." So her daughter, Herodias, goes to Herod Antipas and she says, "I want the head of John the Baptist," but she puts another little twist on it, on a platter, served up like a piece of meat. Now, it was not uncommon in the ancient world and even into the modern world for members of a defeated army, persons who had attempted to take over power in a coup, to have their heads cut off and put on stakes at the gate of the city or in other prominent places as a warning. This is what happens when you mess with power. She wants it on a platter, served up. Herod does just that. He keeps this promise, this rash and improper promise he made in the midst of a wild party, and John loses his head in the process. But what this gives John is something much more important. It is his stamp of credibility as a prophet. Because after all, in the ancient world, what do you do to prophets? Well, for court prophets who tell you what you want to hear, you reward them. But for true prophets, they wind up exiled, imprisoned, often dead. Isn't that one of the primary accusations? You who killed the prophets? This is John's stamp of approval as a true prophet. He has spoken truth to power and he has lost his life in the process. But he's also done something else. He is more frightening to Herod in death than he ever was in life. Because when people come around asking, okay, who is this Jesus guy related to John? Is he Elijah returned? Is he another one of the prophets? Or is he John resurrected? Scares Herod to death. What if John is resurrected in Jesus and Jesus is coming back for revenge? That's what Herod would do after all, isn't it? That's power politics. You see, it's interesting how not everyone who loses their life in these stories is a prophet, but almost all the prophets lose their lives. In his long poem, The Love Song of J. Alfred Prufrock, T.S. Eliot puts it this way. He says, though I've wept and fasted, wept and prayed, though I've seen my head brought in on a platter, I am no prophet, and it is no great matter. And that's true for most, but not for John. This is foreshadowing what's going to happen to Jesus in his encounter with telling truth to power. But in the ancient world, it's not just prophets who lose their lives because they tell truth to power. No, a little over 400 years before John's execution in Athens, there was a man named Socrates. We only know about him because of his student, Plato. Socrates wrote nothing. Plato is the one who wrote about Socrates. Socrates was accused of denying the official gods of Athens, denying the approved gods of the city-state. He was also accused of corrupting youth. How did he corrupt youth? Well, he asked questions. He asked questions for which he didn't have an answer. That wasn't the problem. He asked questions for which the people in power didn't have an answer. And it undercut that power. At his trial, he had a jury of 500 citizens of Athens. Three people had brought charges against him. Those who brought charges had 3 hours to speak. Socrates had 3 hours to speak. At the end, the vote was 280 to convict, 220 to acquit. He was able to take his own life rather than be executed. He was given a poison called hemlock. And though Plato wasn't there to see it, he describes it from the witness of other students, that as he sat with his students and talked, he drank the hemlock and then he walked around until his legs became so numb he couldn't walk, and then he stretched out and then he died. Because he had had the audacity to tell truth to power about the idols about the gods. Just a few years after John's execution, there was another philosopher, a Stoic named Seneca. Seneca had been an advisor to several emperors along the way. They had exiled him on occasion when he said things they didn't like. But none had threatened his life until he offended Nero. For Nero, there was basically one form of punishment, and that was death. Seneca was able to choose his punishment. He chose bleeding to death. You don't want to hear the rest of this story. It was messy and the bleeding didn't work and they had to take other measures. But because he had spoken truth to power, Seneca, who had been a high official under several emperors, was executed. Now there's a third category of folks who tell truth to power. And they are significantly different from the first two. Those are fools. Now, the characters of fools appear prominently in Roman theater, but the character of the wise fool is usually attributed to William Shakespeare. These might be court jesters. They might simply be comic figures. In the ancient Roman theater, it was all slapstick. It was all comedy. But you see, William Shakespeare had an actor who was particularly adept at playing these roles, and so you will find this character in several of his plays. Perhaps the one people know most is the fool, unnamed, other than that, in King Lear, who can tell the truth to Lear when Lear will hear it from no one else. Perhaps their best-known interchange is when the fool says to the king, "If you were my fool, nuncle, I would have thee beaten for being old before thy time." And when Lear asks him why, to explain that, he said, "Well, thou shouldst not have been old till thou hadst been wise." Who gets by with calling the king stupid? But a fool. The fools, the tricksters, the jesters, the wise fools are those who, along with the philosophers and the prophets, can speak truth to power. Sometimes they can escape. There is a common folktale. In fact, the folktale is so common that it has its own listing in an index of folktale motifs. Tells of a jester who had served a king for many, many years. Finally, in telling the truth to this particular king that the king didn't want to hear, the king became so angry that he convicted the man to death, sentenced him to execution. The fool said, "Well, if you're going to execute me, may I at least have the choice in the way I will die?" Well, the king's advisor said, "He serves you well, he served you many years, at least give him that consideration." The king said, "Fine, how do you want to die?" The fool said, "Old age." You know, it's interesting, when we begin to look at the figure of Jesus in the Gospels, he's clearly a prophet. He aligns himself with the prophets. Herod even thinks he's reborn John the Baptist. But he doesn't just tell truth to power. He is the embodiment of truth confronting power. He confronts the power of the Roman Empire and ultimately is killed for his trouble. He is like those philosophers, even though it's a hard word to unpack for him, because he didn't put forth a consistent philosophy. He wasn't really like Socrates, much more of a storyteller. And yet the one thing he did, the one thing he has in common with those philosophers, is that he spoke truth to power in a way that threatened power and he was executed for his trouble. Now, there are many people who would tell you that Jesus was also a fool. Paul addresses that issue. He says, the foolishness of God is wiser than the wisdom of human beings. He has to address it because there are people who think Jesus and his followers are foolish for what they do and the way they respond to power and the way they respond to violence. Why didn't Jesus speak up in that trial with Pilate? Why did he give those enigmatic answers or stand in silence when he literally could have saved himself? He was foolish. Because he did not turn the situation around the way that fool who asked to die of old age did. No, the difference is Jesus trusted God to turn it around. He put his life into God's hands, and it was God who pulled life out of death. It was God who defeated the Roman Empire, the most powerful empire known to human beings to that time. Because of that trust, Jesus, the prophet, the philosopher, and yes, the fool, trusted God enough to let his life be taken. He said, nobody takes it from me, I lay it down myself. Who lets his life be given over? You know, it's interesting. Still today, when you confront power, political, religious, state, the church, when you tell the truth that is inconvenient or that those who have privilege and power don't want to hear, you're very likely to wind up in trouble, just like John, just like Jesus, just like Socrates, just like Seneca, just like those fools. But you know, I believe that if the power of God can confront the Roman Empire, the power of God can even confront the church and transform the church's attitude, can open us into a more loving tradition, can throw the doors open to people we claim to love but do not love in practice. But those who tell truth to power then and now have to be prepared for the consequences. Not always death, but they are never pleasant. But that's who we're called to be. We're called to be followers of Jesus. Each in our own way, a little prophet. Maybe T.S. Eliot was wrong. Maybe he was a prophet, and maybe it does matter. Called to be philosophers, not just people who talk, but who do. Called to be fools for Christ. Foolish enough to believe that God is love and God means what God says about loving the whole cosmos. That's our calling. And we have the best example in the world to follow. The philosopher, prophet, fool, Jesus of Nazareth. Thanks be to God.